ad agencies that are nice get more business. So say Linda Kaplan Thaler and Robin Koval, who are the principals at the Kaplan Thaler Group, a New York ad agency. I recently had a chance to interview Robin Koval. Why should we be nice in business?
Well, not just because your mother told you. Obviously, we kind of feel that nice is a very misunderstood word, and it gets a bad rap. And what people don't realize is that it's a big success strategy. It's a strategic tool. If you actually do the research, you'll find that nice people get hired more frequently and sooner. Nice employers have higher employee retention rates, which, you know, if you think about what it costs to replace an employee, a third of a year's salary is that's just dollars and cents. Nice people, whether it's in business or in their personal lives, are less likely to get sued. And then, you know, just on the personal side, and, you know, we are business people, but we're all people too, nice people are healthier, nice people live longer, nice people are less likely to get divorced. So, I mean, it's a success strategy. It's not just a, you know, kind of a follow the golden rule kind of, truism.
Marketing and advertising can be a pretty cutthroat business, especially on the agency side. Do you find it sometimes possible, it's hard to be actually nice and a good person in the business you're in?
Well, I think that, you know, one of the things that happens in any business, obviously we're in the advertising business, but in any business is that, nice is kind of like a muscle. It's easy to forget to use it or to let it atrophy, but, you can actually train yourself to be nicer. We have actually won business because we were told we were nice. I will give you an example. We were, I'll give you a few, but I'll give you this one first. A number of years ago, we were pitching a piece of business against a whole bunch of agencies, big agencies, bigger than us. We felt we were the underdog. And of course, we worked our, behinds off to show great work, and felt we did a great job, and we won the business. And when we asked this client, why did you award the business to us, they said, well, we really liked your work. You guys did a great presentation, but I will tell you the thing that really set you apart is that you actually seem to like each other. And we said, what do you mean by that? And they said, well, we had all these other presentations, and we didn't get the sense that the people in the room really had good relationships with one another. And that made us concerned that, we'd spend as much time managing that as managing, getting great work. That's sort of like when, we started thinking about this whole notion of, nice as a power tool, as a success strategy, versus, it just kind of being a way to, win friends and influence people. The story, I don't know if you've had a chance to read the book yet, but the very first story in the book is about a client that we won recently, U.S. Bank, was frankly a little apprehensive about working with a New York agency. They're based in Cincinnati and Minneapolis, and we were the only New York agency on their review list. And, I think they were, the other agencies were Midwestern agencies, Chicago agencies, that they, just sort of felt kind of more comfortable with in terms of demeanor and style. And one of the things that really surprised us is we have this amazing security guard in our building, Frank. He's just like the nicest, happiest, wonderful guy. He greets everybody with this enormous hello when they come in. And when the now the chairman of U.S. Bank came up to our offices after receiving, a typical Frank greeting, said, that really made a difference to me, because a company that would hire a guy like Frank gets what U.S. Bank is about, because their whole positioning is based on a five-star service guarantee, that everything is based on service and customer do it because it makes us feel better, and we do it because it makes us really successful.
Mm-hmm. How can you train yourself to be nice? That's something you mentioned.
And if you go to our website, you can see it. The website is thepowerofnice.com.
Mm-hmm.
We developed a test, the NICE Q. We did it with a psychologist. And the point of it is that and you can kind of gauge your baseline level of niceness and then kind of understand ways to be nicer because it's really, being nice is, really it's like a muscle, and most of us are actually, we are born to be nice innately. Our genes want us to cooperate. That's how we, manage to get out of the cave in the first place. And then, of course, we live in time-precious, stressful times, and we see, people, basically being told to eat their young on reality TV, and so we can forget, or we can get out of the habit, and it can be very simple things like just smiling. It's amazing that you can do this with babies, and it works with corporate executives too. If you smile at someone, they smile back, which automatically, when you smile, it sets off a whole chemical reaction in your body. The same thing of paying people compliments. We're so afraid in these politically correct times to ever make a personal comment about somebody, but, we're dealing with people all the time, or we say, shut up and listen. A lot of us are so competitive and so concerned in meetings, in interactions with our peers that, we want to make sure that we get that, the credit for the idea and get it out there first, that we're so busy talking that we don't actually listen. Larry King, we quote him in the book, has this wonderful quote, which is absolutely true. And again, it's based in scientific fact. He says, I never learned anything while I was talking. And you can't, because there are two different parts of your brain, the part that talks and the part that listens, and they're not necessarily connected.
That's right.
In the same way. So, these are all things that you can do that if once you become conscious of them, they're not really hard, but that start creating a different relationship with the people that you interact with. There's a chapter in the book called Put Your Head on Their Shoulders, which is really about empathy. Most of us are so busy, we like to say starring in our own movies. We see everything from our own, internal perspective that, we often don't take the perspective of how is the other person feeling and how can I react. And how can I adjust my behavior based on what their movie is? And you find, once somebody feels that they've got an empathetic audience, they open up. And they tell you what they really mean or really want, or now I know you get me. Which is, I think in certainly in advertising, critical in terms of, convincing clients that you understand their problem.
What's the meanest thing that you've ever done in your career in the ad business? Have you ever, for instance, done a negative ad?
We've done comparative advertising. I wouldn't call that mean. I think comparative advertising, if it's true, has a role. I don't think I've ever done anything that I would look back and say was mean. I don't know. You might need to ask other people about questions. But I will tell you that... I think as we wrote this book, certainly Linda and I like to think of ourselves as nice people. We're hardly, Mother Teresa. And as we wrote the book, we became very cognizant and much more hyper aware of our own behavior and I think how we evaluated work. And, people do occasionally bring in work that's a little snarky. And I think our sensitivity to that has been raised.
Does that mean you realize now that you can never lose your temper in a client meeting because the client will point out that you're the author of a book called The Power of Nice?
No, my husband has pointed that out many, many times. Even worse than clients. Every time, there's a little disagreement going on, he says, Power of Nice, Power of Nice. That's not a bad thing. I think it actually, it forces you to, Jay Leno, who wrote the foreword for the book for us, who is, of course, an incredibly nice guy and a very powerful man. Obviously, he can get whatever he wants in whatever way he wants it. He said this to us, and it's just a wonderful way of putting it is you can, you know, say to the person sitting next to you, whether it's your coworker, a client, you know, anybody, or, you know, your spouse, shut the darn window, it's cold in here, or, hey, you know, do you think it's cold in here? They both are going to get the window closed.
Yeah.
But, you know, one's a confrontation that shuts down everything that will come back to haunt you. You've just planted a germ, you know, kind of a mean germ. And the other, you know, creates a conversation and relationship, and, you know, we like to say plants a positive seed. So there are choices. I mean, we're not, our point of view is that this isn't the only way. We're not, you know, naive enough to think that, you know, mean people or plotters and political animals, you know, will not find ways to succeed and probably will always do that. It's just that the point is, well, there is another way to be and be equally successful, and, you know, we all make our own choice. We all look in the mirror every morning. You know, who would you rather be?
Yeah. Let's go to negative just for a second here.
Okay.
What's wrong? This is about the advertising industry. What's wrong with advertising today?
I would say lack of courage. I think that, you know, I think that we unfortunately live in a very unforgiving time where, and I don't think this is the fault of our clients or the people on the agency side. It's just about the kind of pressures that we work under and the, you know, the demands that are made on work to, you know, everything has to be tested a million different ways, and, you know, there aren't a lot of opportunities to trust your gut instinct, and, you know, this kind of goes back to the first book we wrote, Bang, but the truth is we're much smarter intuitively than we are analytically, and I think often, you know, we just don't get enough of a chance to kind of use that intuitive part of our brain as much as, you know, we should in terms of how much value it provides.
Mm-hmm. How did you come up with the Affleck duck? What's the story behind that?
Well, I told you part of it before. I'll give you the whole long story now. We had met the Affleck folks, and they had told us that, they told us all sorts of stuff. They told us, you know, everything about the business and the fact that people didn't really understand what, at the time, they were calling supplemental insurance was, and, you know, we're sitting there and listening, and then the CEO of the company, his name is Dan Amos, wonderful guy, said something that, you know, it's like, you know how somebody says something and, like, the light bulb just goes off? He says, well, you know what, it just makes me crazy that nobody knows the darn name of this company. And it was, you know, very kind of pivotal for us because it's always, I think, in advertising about finding, you know, what is the real problem you need to solve here? And simplifying it, and we realized that, you know, the biggest help we could provide for them was finding a way for people to create awareness for them. They had less than 7% advertising, 13% advertising awareness at the time, and like 30% brand awareness. This is a Fortune 250 company. I mean, it's not, you know, they were making a lot of money. I mean, they were very, very successful, but to the broader consumer world, which is very important for them because ultimately, that's who their sales force is going to sell those policies to. Nobody knew who they were. So we said, we get it. And we came back to New York. They're based in Columbus, Georgia. And we, you know, worked and, you know, had lots of ideas. And it was this, I mean, kind of very random, completely kind of, you think about chaos theory and how ideas develop, definitely did not come from a long analytical conversation, but came from this sort of little creative spark of, oh my God, the name of this company sounds like a duck quacking. And we actually had the courage to present it along with other things. And we went to focus groups. And it wasn't the idea that won in the focus groups. And I mean, this is, you know, about, I think going back to that point I made earlier about courage, it was polarizing. As you can imagine, some people liked it, some people didn't. But it was the idea that got the most conversation. You know, when you go out and, you know, stand in the ladies' room, what are they talking about after the group, parking lot. The idea that actually did the best in the groups was very typical, warm, emotional, you know, kind of if you love your family, you'll get Aflac, was perfectly nice.
Yep.
And then we went into a quantitative round, and we had five ideas, and Aflac, you know, felt they really could only invest in testing four. So we said, you know what, we'll, and the duck was going to be dropped out, and we said, no, you know what, we'll pay to test that one. If it loses, our dime. If it wins, you know, we're sure you'll find a way to make good on it. And when we tested it, it was the highest scoring insurance ad that this was ASI Testing Service had ever tested. It was double the norm. And Dan, who very charming man, said, well, I don't know. We're going to go with it, by Southerner. We're going to go with it, but I don't know if I'm going to tell the board until it's on the air. The CEO, he can do whatever he wants. That's how the Aflac Duck was born. We put it on the air. Within 6 days, they'd had more hits to their website than they'd had in the entire previous year. Over, I think, the first 3 years of the campaign, they doubled their market cap, which... not entirely due to the advertising, but certainly we take, you know, a little credit for that. Their brand awareness is in the 90s now, which is remarkable. One statistic that I love to quote is our duck has a higher Q score. You know, Q scores that rate celebrity and character, popularity, has a higher Q score than the Energizer Bunny or Ronald McDonald, which, if you think about all the money that's gone into creating those public personas, you know, it's been wildly successful.
Interesting. Would that campaign obviously was heavily TV based. Does that show how powerful TV can be when you get it right?
Yes. I think, you know, I guess I'd answer that by saying, I think it shows how powerful advertising can be when you get it right. I don't know because we didn't launch it this way, but my guess is that if we were launching it in 2006 versus 1999, maybe we would have launched it with some, you know, viral video campaign. There might have, you know, been a lot of other ways that it would have been approached, but I think TV is a medium where when you have a very, very simple, iconic kind of idea, it's perfect for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do think TV is still quite powerful. And I don't think it's going away. I just think that the way we use it has to be reevaluated so that, you know, as you think about now all the multitudes of tools that are at your disposal, you're putting, you know, the right elements in the right media.
Why do animals work so well in ad campaigns? For instance, up here we have Bell Canada. It uses two beavers. I don't know if you've seen those ads. Telus, which is another cell phone company, uses frogs and an assortment of budgies. Why do animals work?
Well, you know, it's the rule of three. Brides, babies, and animals. I don't know. I think it's because, you know what, they're funny. I mean, it's funny. It's just funny to see a duck quacking the name of the company.
Oh, yeah.
And I think in all seriousness, a lot of times what they help you do, and they certainly, you know, helped us in the case of Aflac, is the truth is it's a pretty serious product. Aflac's number one product is a cancer insurance policy. You know, and insurance in general is scary, it's boring, it's confusing. So when you diffuse a lot of that with, you know, ducks or chimpanzees or lizards or, you know, whatever it is, I think it helps make ideas more engaging and approachable, especially ones that, you know, we might want to back away from a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Is that the campaign you're most proud of? Aflac Duck, or is there another one?
Well, it's certainly really proud of because, again, I think it's, I don't know how familiar you are with it in Canada, but Continental Airlines is one of our very large clients,
yes.
And we have a campaign for them called Work Hard, Fly Right, which has been running, I think, for, oh my God, I'm going to say 8 years now, and helped in turning around. I mean, Continental Airlines was an airline that had been through two bankruptcies. People were, it had such a bad reputation that employees of the airline, you know, they'd have to wear that pin that says Continental. They would take it off their uniforms before they walked into Walmart when they got off of work. I mean, that's how angry people were at Continental. And Work Hard, Fly Right really became the embodiment of the reinvention of this airline and has helped them to become number one out of the New York market, which is the largest business travel market, has helped them more most recently, is obviously tough times to be in the airline industry, to be profitable, one of the few traditional carriers that is. And I think it works, you know, in a lot of the ways the Aflac Duck works. It's simple, it's iconic, you get it. If you know the campaign, it's like the kind of idea that you can execute, you know, airlines, when you have an idea, it has to work, you know, from the tail of a 767 down to a cocktail napkin. I mean, all of the places that it exists and across, you know, in this case, global geography, across, you know, many, many thousand employees have to get it and understand it and live it. So we're very, very proud of that.
Okay. That's great, Robin. I really appreciate your time today.
Okay.